The Evolution of DevOps with Dave McKinstry.
The Azure DevOps Podcast is a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Each show brings you hard-hitting interviews with industry experts, innovating better methods, and sharing success stories. Listen on to learn how to increase quality, ship quickly, and operate well. And now your host, Jeffrey Palermo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Jeffrey Palermo, your host for helping you and your teams move fast, deliver quality, and to run your software with confidence in Azure, all while using everything that the .NET ecosystem has to offer. The podcast is sponsored by ClearMeasure, a software architecture company that empowers .NET teams to be self-sufficient and able to deliver world-class results. They are hiring architects as well as .NET engineers who'd like a path to become an architect, so you can go to clearmeasure.com/careers for that. And if you have a comment or question for the show, you can send me an email at podcast@palermo.network. And also, my new online TV show has launched. You can search for, quote, Programming with Palermo in any of the podcast directories or YouTube. You can also find it on www.palermo.network. So check that out. Got some really good topics in there. My guest today on the show is a repeat guest from episode number 5, Dave McKinstry. Dave is a director at GitHub, helping to drive the Fast Track program. But prior to GitHub, he worked as a program manager inside Microsoft with the Azure DevOps Services community team, connecting with partners and customers and spreading modern practices and helping developers succeed with DevOps and Azure. And prior to this position at Microsoft, he's been in software and services and technical sales for over 30 years as a consultant, principal consultant, co-owner, manager. He's always helped people efficiently build better software, and he loves what he does as a technologist and enjoys being a part of today's rapid technology evolution. Dave, welcome back to the show. How are you, sir?
I am doing well, Jeffrey. It's so great to talk to you again. It's been a long time.
Yes, yes, indeed. Good to see you again. Now, we want to kind of catch up with the evolution of DevOps and you're working inside GitHub, but kind of backtrack a little bit for the listeners who maybe didn't hear you on your previous interview. What are some of the kind of the high points in your career that led you to work in this space? And then of course your transition from Microsoft to GitHub.
Absolutely. So I'll go back to roughly 2005. Before that, I'll go back to 2000. So maybe some of your listeners were still in diapers at that point. But at that point, I was switching from corporate IT type positions, developer, architect, C++ programmer, into consulting. And at that point, I started consulting a lot on Microsoft technologies. I was an architect for a consulting firm. Great. 5 years of that, and about 5 years into that, I was working with Microsoft. I was part of the MVP program, which you're well aware of. Mm-hmm. And there was this new product coming out. And to me, it looked like a way to actually transform how we write software from a tools perspective. And that was TFS, Team Foundation Server, mm-hmm. something we're all aware of. So in 2005, I joined a friend of mine, Chris Menegay, in a new company, a startup, to do consulting around what we now call DevOps, focused on the TFS platform, now Azure mm-hmm. DevOps. So I spent a number of years in that before joining Microsoft. At Microsoft, I moved into their sales field, their technical field, helping our customers from the Microsoft perspective, and then into, welcome home, the Azure DevOps product group, the team who actually writes Azure DevOps, the product engineering team. And then something happened. You may recall Microsoft acquired this little company named GitHub, mm-hmm. and they took a big shift in terms of how they were trying to bring their DevOps tools together. Now, the messaging hasn't changed a lot in terms of what our North Star is, but there was a lot of confusion between that time 2-3 years ago and now, where a lot of DevOps people at Microsoft moved into GitHub to help make sure GitHub had the engineering resources they did. Mm-hmm. And that was part of me. When I did that, I moved out of the product team and into where I am now, a manager in the Fast Track program. So that's a long list of stuff. But mm-hmm. I've had the opportunity to play, like you said, just about every role. Everything from manual QA to system IT ops administrator. Loved all my time as an architect. I still hack code as often as I can, but now it's for fun, not for work. Mm-hmm. But I've worked with so many customers over the year and seen so many, you know, recurring patterns, people doing things right or wrong, mm-hmm. and some neat snowflakes too, learning so much about how people not only build software, but what software is used for in the world.
Well, over the last three, 4 years, whenever that acquisition happened, you're right, quite a few people at Microsoft and a lot of people in the Azure DevOps team at Microsoft have gone to GitHub. How would you describe the integration yet separate? Because I think of, I also think of the Xbox team. It's part of Microsoft, but they kind of do some things differently. And so how would you describe, what are the things where it's the same and what would you describe as differently?
So I'll draw a harder wall between GitHub and Xbox, for example. If I go onto the Microsoft side, Xbox, Bing, Office, very, very different engineering teams. Windows, massive, massive engineering team. But obviously building very different products. And therefore, we do have the common engineering platform, the one engineering system they all work to. But no doubt, there are high optimizations, customizations between what Xbox is doing and what Windows is doing. Now, moving on to the GitHub side, GitHub is more like LinkedIn. So we are separate but together. It's really very interesting. GitHub is, we have our own CEO, right? We don't just report up. We have our own org structure. In GitHub, believe it or not, I use Google Docs, use G Suite. I use Zoom on my daily basis. Now, don't get me wrong. I use everything because I work with customers. And I use Teams if they use Teams, right?
Yeah.
But it is a separate company. Who would say a Microsoft company is going to use something other than, well, I can't speak for LinkedIn, but I know that GitHub absolutely uses the tools that we use to run our business. So we are absolutely part of Microsoft, but even more so, we're absolutely different.
Yeah, gotcha.
And I'm not sure if you were asking about the engineering practices and such. One of the things I did a lot under Microsoft was talk about the evolution of Microsoft, of Microsoft's DevOps journey and how they went from the packaged software every 2 to 3 years and, you know, very successful in what we would now think of as a snail's pace to continuous delivery, you know, thousands and thousands of deployments all the time. Whereas GitHub really was kind of that born in the cloud startup, Silicon Valley startup type of company. And they came from a completely different path and building and growing in the same direction, growing towards this enterprise grade platform for supporting, you know, engineering teams.
Yeah. Okay. Nice. Well, with so much perspective that you have and seeing so much of the journey, I think anybody who looks up DevOps, really, like, oh, there was a conference in 2010 that coined the word DevOps and all. But from your experience, what are the, I guess, the phases of DevOps? How has it evolved over time from the thinking at the start to what it is now?
So, yeah, and I think DevOps is the term I want to stick with. It's my own personal preference. I'll talk about that in just a little bit. But it's not just DevOps. It's really the evolution of how we deliver software, how we deliver value to our customers with software, right? If we go back to when I was an active coder, we spent a lot of time in the waterfall world. I was there to observe, and we talked about pair programming and test-driven development, all these practices that iteratively improved how we do software. We're no longer building software the way we build bridges. We don't go out there with architectural designs and plan it for months and months and months before we get the first concrete port, right? We actually iterate. We move fast. This is all an evolution to get us to this point. It includes things like Agile and Scrum as really a foundational way of looking at how we iterate through software delivery. And I know you were part of this discussion as well. We had that time where we talked about application lifecycle management is the evolution from SDLC, software development lifecycle. We talked about this lifecycle. We kept growing it out and then saying, let's not just talk about how we compile code. Let's talk about actually the software running for the customer. Until that's happening and it's successfully running, there's no value. And so over time, we've been zooming out to the point where you say, well, let's take these dev people and these ops people, put them together, because until it's operating, it's not valuable, right? Yeah. So that's kind of where DevOps, I'd say, won the war on what the terminology should be. I will also say, as people try to fit things into it, one of the common terms we hear these days is DevSecOps.
Yeah.
I use it slightly begrudgingly. I will absolutely use the term because it does focus on the fact that security is part of it. But I also don't like using it because, yes, security is a part of it. Security has to be part of everything we do. So security is every engineer, every product owner, anyone working in your company, security is part of their job.
Yeah.
It has to be. So saying DevSecOps is redundant. I actually went to a point where one customer at one point told me that they actually knew what the next thing was because it was so important that they were taking other things into consideration. They said, we're currently doing dev test sec ops, but we really think the future is biz dev test sec ops. You've missed the point. You've missed the point. It is everything you need to do. And as you know, it was very much a cultural change, right? Everything back from the agile days and the idea that we're not going to build up these big plans, we're going to start working together and trusting each other and iterating up through where we are today, where what a team has to do is not just write code and get it to compile, it's get it running in production. It's have things deployed successfully, continuously. It's value, get the valuable data back from those systems, that the telemetry, the metrics that help us improve on what we're doing. I mean, that's what we think of as DevOps these days. And I think some of the things I see going forward culturally are things like the inner source world. And I think that is something.
Tell us more about that.
So inner source, oversimplifying, there's lots of resources out there. The idea that you take open source principles and turn them internally on your own practices. If you think about open source, and for the record, for me, 2 or 3 years ago, coming from the Microsoft side, very enterprise focused, these were all things that sounded like buzzwords. Don't get me wrong. Open source was pervasive. Everyone knew it was there. And it wasn't the Steve Ballmer type era of open source being evil. It was, yes, it's there. It's won its place in the world. These days, you can't do anything without using open source.
Yeah.
Done. But the whole idea, the culture around it, the practices, the idea that you would open your source base so that others can look at it and contribute to it, so that others can participate in the success of the software you're delivering. And the software you're delivering becomes part of what they build, others build upon. It was a little bit foreign to me. They're just that it would be such a foundational piece. Now, turning things internally, especially for large companies, think about like the Microsofts of the world, think about the multiple tens of thousands of engineers out there, all writing software. Now, we're getting to something that any enterprise has been thinking about for decades, and that's how do I reuse that software? I think it's more than just how do I reuse that software. How do I make the culture of reuse part of what I do?
Yeah.
Going back in time, if you think about 10 years ago, somebody on the Office team, Microsoft Office, who needed to have an XML parser, it was far easier for them to go out there and write their own XML parser than it was to go figure out that there's somebody in Windows, or frankly, hundreds of people in Windows, who have already written the same parser that you need.
Right.
So now we have all this excess source code, all this excess bloat. And it's not just about duplicating the time and the effort. It's the fact is, what I get on the other side are all suboptimal XML parsers. That reusable piece of code is not being reused. And therefore, the XML parser I have is really good in this way, but really bad in that way. And you have one that's better in other ways. And none of the, we don't have the benefit of the best of all of us. So instead, if you could find my XML parser, say, I like that, but I need this on it, you can now contribute to my code. And now we both have a better XML parser, a better set of software.
Well, that's a good point. Open source, of course, anything external that's been shared, you can see the code, but there are a lot of organizations with multiple software teams, and they just don't automatically give their own employees even read access to the repositories of the other team.
That's the point. And that's the cultural aspect. And tooling historically has also reinforced this. The idea that we want to inherently build silos. We don't want to share anything. Now, there are some real reasons to have trust boundaries, right? To say, this is my IP. I don't really want to share it outside. Okay, that's fair. That's absolutely fair. But what about internally? What about the stuff that you have inside? Can you trust the people that you have working for you to do the best work they can for your organization? And if the answer is no, there are probably other problems, other things to worry about. But you want to get to that point. You want to have that cultural trust where you know that everyone, regardless of what you do for the living for that company, what product you build, if you're a software engineer, you're there to help your company be better. And therefore, if you can help by helping some other team a little bit and maybe in the same time helping yourself, that is fantastic. So yeah, the idea of visibility, the idea that you walk into a team and all of a sudden, all the software, well, I won't say all, almost all the software that the organization is authoring is at your fingertips. Now, don't get me wrong. Just like open source, we still have to have practices that ensure the quality, stability, resilience, all the things that make that software valuable, not just the features. Back to this, you know, applying open source, inner source practices internally. If you and I are working on a piece of code, you want to actually improve upon my code because you want to use it for your own purposes. You want to fix a bug, improve some documentation, maybe add a new feature, and that will help you use my software and that will help my software be better. You have access to issue a pull request against my code internally. You can not only see the code and use it, but you can issue a pull request against it. But then through the magic of tooling, I can put the boundaries in place that say, yeah, but it's my software. And I still have to review your code, make sure it passes all my checks, make sure all the CI/CD processes work, make sure the tests are there, anything else I need to do. I get the value of accepting your enhancements to make my software better, but I also still have control over the end result of that software.
Many thanks to our podcast sponsor, Clear Measure. Clear Measure is a software architecture company that empowers clients' development teams to be self-sufficient, moving fast, delivering quality, and running their systems with confidence. Whether starting a new project or developing new technologies or techniques, Clear Measure sets up your team to deliver world-class results. Learn more at www.clearmeasure.com. Clear Measure, empowering software delivery. Clear Measure is also happy to be a sponsor of the video podcast, Programming with Palermo. Watch, learn, and program alongside Chief Architect Jeffrey Palermo. Videos are added weekly and available on syndicated locations supporting video podcast or by visiting palermo.network. Tune in today.
What is the state on the maturity of all those checks that, in your opinion, should be part of a pull request evaluation?
Yes. So two different questions. What's the possibility of having these perfect checks from a technology perspective? If I were to say, I'd say as an industry, we're probably about 80% where we would like to be, which might sound low, because some of these things are really hard to do. In the perfect world, in my opinion, a PR check would be something that does everything it possibly can do, everything to ensure the security, the stability, the features are working. It's, you know, everything I can possibly think of that makes the most valuable piece of software and have it turned around to me from a review perspective instantaneously. Mm-hmm. There's always a trade-off though. And security is a good place you find this, where a lot of times security checks take longer. Mm-hmm. And so I can run a unit test, and if I've done that well, I'm getting instantaneous feedback.
Right.
But maybe it takes a little bit longer. So then I start figuring out how in my life cycle I can make sure I'm getting everything I possibly can as quickly as reasonable.
So besides the automated tests, because I think what that discussion in the industry is over 20 years old now on what types of testing and whatnot, but scanners and analyzers, what's the state of those? Which ones, in your opinion, just should be integrated? And has GitHub chosen a standard set that are integrated in that maybe the industry can learn from?
So at this point, I'm going to stay away from product pitches, but obviously GitHub has, we've acquired Dependabot. Wrap them into our product, call them GitHub Advanced Security. The industry as a whole, there are a lot of scanners out there. They're ones I will remain nameless, but a lot of our customers use that are the real giants in the industry. The StatCan Analyst testing, SAST, variant analysis is what we use internally for advanced security. But the idea that you look at the code base and you query it to figure out the patterns that might lead it to be vulnerable. And the more advanced ones, you actually look up and down the call stack to figure out if it is really a vulnerability or not. So GitHub Advanced Security powered by CodeQL is what we use internally. It's part of what we're driving towards in the Microsoft space. So I believe it was last week. It'll be a little different when you get out. Ignite happened and Microsoft did an announcement that GitHub Advanced Security will be part of that. Absolutely opinionated. That's absolutely what we use. The types of things, forgetting the specific tools, the product names I just gave you, there are certain techniques we want to do. Some of these are very slow, or not very slow. Some of them are moderately slow. Historically, static analysis testing has been slow because it has to go through and crawl through all your code bases. If it's a compiled language, it probably has to do some compilations on it, do some other things around that, some instrumentation to figure out what's good and what's bad. So those are the things that historically have been gated at the end. I'll do all my work, I'll do all my tests, and then I'll throw it over to the scanner to see what happened. We want to shift that left as far as possible. Again, DevSecOps, DevOps, we want that security to be as quickly as possible. Things like scanning for secrets, we shift it left to the point where we find it before you actually push it into the code base, right? That, that's best case. You say, I want to do a commit into the repository. It says, no, you can't. You have a secret in there. That's good. Yeah. I blocked a problem before it became a problem, right? Dependency analysis, you know, looking to see if they're, you know, software composition analysis, SCA, to see if you're using a package that maybe has a built-in vulnerability, an older version of a package or something that's known to be out there. Something we also build in. This is something that's a dynamic base. Whereas a secret, there's a very good chance you can know it's a secret just by looking at the pattern. You can't necessarily tell if something's vulnerable because vulnerabilities pop up later. You're sitting there, you're using a known good package that's no longer known good because they found a vulnerability. Right. So you can't push it that far back. You could push it close to it. But the Dependabot features, and again, whether you're using GitHub or not, they allow it to know what's happening and build this graph of all the different dependencies and which things depend on other things, depend on other things that have a vulnerability. So it can tell you as you're sitting there in your tool, as an engineer, these are the things I found that you really need to upgrade. Here's the known version that needs to be upgraded. And in fact, I like this on the Dependabot side. And this Dependabot is one of those features in GitHub. If you're using GitHub, it's basically free. Just go ahead and use it. You should. There's no reason not to. It'll actually issue pull requests for you. So if you have a known vulnerability in your code base, it'll actually issue a pull request and say, update from this version of that node package, or that NuGet package, to this new version so that you can get rid of the vulnerability. Makes it a lot more actionable, a lot easier.
Nice. Well, it seems to me, and you correct me if I'm wrong, that just the way Microsoft has integrated versus left GitHub independent, Microsoft has kind of done some things to strengthen GitHub, like hosted build agents and other things. And then GitHub does things that strengthen Microsoft.
Oh, yeah.
And especially, yeah, there's nothing that keeps us from using a GitHub hosted source repository, but leverage Azure boards and the delivery plans and all the other richness that probably GitHub isn't eager to layer on as quickly. So what's your take? What's the strategy there? Is it coincidental or is that intentional?
Well, I think the answer is both. And I like the way you actually described it very well. So going back to the current state, there are a lot of customers that will choose a hybrid model using Azure DevOps for things such as Azure boards and Azure test plans potentially, but choose to use GitHub for the repositories and have this hybrid better together as the story they use there. If we go back 2 to 3 years, 3 years plus, when we were having this initial discussion, Microsoft said, GitHub is the future and Azure DevOps is alive and well and not going away. And it was a terribly ambiguous statement.
It was a terrible message. It basically says, we'll support it for 10 years, but we're done with it, which doesn't seem to be the truth either.
But that wasn't what they were trying to say, but that was the message that was heard.
Right.
And that's our problem. I think at Ignite, we've come up with a much better way to say that the story is clearer. And that is, not only is it not going away, Azure DevOps is still a growing platform. The philosophies of the two platforms are different. And that's where a lot of these disconnects come up from. If you're somebody on the GitHub side that comes up with the GitHub view of the world, a very engineering-centric view of the world, GitHub is already a far superior product. Done. If you're someone who came up from the holistic DevOps side that wants to say, how am I integrating my product planning and all these into the story, and how am I doing that at enterprise scale, Azure DevOps looks like a much better product. And therefore, depending on which direction you're looking from, which lens, you'll come up with a completely different answer. The people 2 to 3 years ago, the incorrect story from the GitHub side that people would infer is, GitHub will have feature parity with every single feature on Azure DevOps within 2 years. And that was never stated at the top, but that message kind of filtered through, and that's what people thought was being said. What was really being said is, we're going to make it so that you want to move to GitHub for the things that GitHub does.
Yeah.
And I think we're succeeding at that. Like you said, the repositories, the security, there's a lot of things that this inner source culture, this internal visibility by default, all these things are things that GitHub does exceedingly well. Adding on new features, new capabilities that are engineering focused, like code spaces and Copilot, these are amazing.
Yeah, for sure. Much more automatic.
Yeah, but going back to the Azure DevOps side, again, trying to disambiguate, we understand now that first of all, there were misunderstandings on the two products in terms of where they are and how fast things are going away or not going away, how long things will be supported. the Azure DevOps side is still the long tail. You know, someday down the road, it won't exist anymore. But, you know, frankly, someday down the road, we won't have CPUs anymore. I don't know what, I don't know what the future is going to hold. So don't put a time frame on it, right? But the investments in Azure DevOps are coming back to make sure the people that are using Azure DevOps and are happy with it, happy with this holistic broad view and not the engineering focused view that GitHub is doing so well at, get the support they need. I mean, GitHub Advanced Security, that SecOps piece of the DevSecOps we talked about from GitHub is being brought into the Azure DevOps world so that they can get the security, which everyone knows is so important.
Yeah. So speaking of the evolution, kind of talk to some dev. What about ops? What's it evolving to? Where is it now?
Yeah. And the answer, I mean, you understand from a consulting perspective that the answer is always depends on where you are. I'm not the deepest level of person in the space, but from where I sit in it, I think it's continuing to evolve the direction it has been evolving and improve. The infrastructure, from the deployment in the infrastructure as code, turning the operational pieces in terms of how it's deployed, the industry is doing much better. Whether you're going to a standard cloud provider, Azure, for example, maybe AWS, fantastic. How do we provision this? The idea that an operations person is not just operations. They're not just I'm running a server. They're actually looking at how that server is provisioned and the lifecycle of it the same way that somebody would look at software, right? And I think to me, the bigger part, the SRE part of this is how's the discipline of keeping that value up and alive and running, making sure that not just monitoring, but the feedback loops in terms of if I get data and I see something going wrong, how do I improve the overall platform that we're running, the software that we're running, such that it's even more maintainable, more resilient, and just better in general. The feedback loops we've seen in this DevOps loop, where the things running in production drive new features and new software, are also driving new platform capabilities, new platform monitoring, improving how you perceive issues and how fast you can actually remediate issues.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It seems like over time, well, the marketing side just pushes cloud. But from an architecture standpoint, it seems like more and more things have become software defined. Like, software defined networks are kind of early. That message isn't spread. But if you think software defined server, you write some code and provision a VM, but now you write some code and it provisions a cloud service. Heck, if 15 years ago used to be, it was this new thing to have to write some code to make a change to a database schema. Those used to be set in stone. So it seems like more and more concepts are becoming software defined. Is that the right way to think about it, or how do you think differently?
I do think about it. I also use a different term that you use as well, and that's as code. Everything is code.
Yeah, same. Yeah.
Again, being very targeted, you're talking about, for example, databases and now networks. I mean, these are very different things. Monitoring is code, platform, how you actually configure that. The Microsoft One ES has a lot of stuff built onto it to allow them to, so the application teams, the dev teams, engineering teams, to configure how they're going to monitor their own application. That's part of their job. And like you're saying, networks, all the rest of it, it's becoming ambiguous. It's becoming, where do you draw the line between what's hardware and what's software? It's just all stuff that runs to deliver value, more tools. Going to the pipeline is one that I like to some extent, because if you go back to the product, Azure DevOps product, Azure Pipelines, one of the things that people love about it, this is very Microsoft-centric view of the world. People love Microsoft, love it for this reason, but very visual. The classic pipelines in Azure DevOps, you know, drag and drop type stuff, wiring things together. And it was very easy to configure things and allowed people who were not able to do CI/CD to get into that space. But that's what the Azure DevOps team is moving away from. That functionality is not deprecated, but they introduced the idea of having pipelines as code, YAML, to keep up with the industry. You needed to have the configuration of how you do your CI/CD in code managed the same way your source code for the application is. And the same way your infrastructure code is. Everything is code because it has to be. And then you get the benefits of all the rest of the maturity in that industry. How do we do software? How do we do the checks? How do we do the pull requests? How do we do the tests? How I do tests on Terraform or linting or security checks are different than I would do them for C#. And by the same token, they're also the same.
So as we kind of wrap up here on time, fast forward me to, I don't know, some 5 year, whatever, some significant number of years down the road, where's it going to be? I mean, and now I know that you're a part of future strategy discussions, but I'm not asking, you know, where, what, like GitHub products, but as an industry, where do you think the industry is going to be, you know, number of years down the road?
I think there's a space that's been emerging for a long, long time, has never found its legs. We find this in AI and ML, we find it in data, and we find it all as the low code, no code. The idea that you can develop stuff without having to be a hardcore coder. Mm-hmm. And I'd say most of those have historically been disconnected from the engineering disciplines that go with them, the DevOps practices. I do think there is a win here where the engineering practices, but the fluidness at the higher level platforms we're talking about, you know, network as code. Mm-hmm. You know, the ability to have all these higher level features and functions allow us to be more productive, and the engineering disciplines that allow us to do this in a consistent way. I think there's going to be a time where these things really come together very well. Finding a nice intermediate where you still have the ability to do the deep, hardcore technical coding practices we do today, and the very lightweight and higher level abstraction that we've seen a lot coming up through the new technologies, but also finding a better way for them to merge together so that both of them, we get the best of both worlds. I don't think I've quite given you the answer. Going back to how we started this entire discussion, though, the evolution of DevOps, I do think, again, 2-3 years ago, open source, I thought of it as a tool. But frankly, open source is part of the cultural evolution into internal development practices that I think we're going to find. The idea that let's empower our developers, whether I'm a company that has 10 developers across my entire organization, or whether I am a Microsoft or a Google, you know, just a giant software company. Regardless of that, I think the idea that you're going to empower every single developer, every single engineer to do the best work they can, allow them to contribute to ways in the organization that the organization didn't even know they could, and get so much more value out of. I think the idea, you know, I hate to say a bunch of developers standing in circles singing kumbaya, but the idea that we can actually do our best work because our cultures, our corporate cultures will support it, I have to believe that's where we're going.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thanks, Dave, for coming back on the show and helping us out with the evolution of DevOps. It's been a great conversation. I've enjoyed it.
Well, thanks so much. And I hopefully it's not so long next time, but Jeffrey, thanks for all the work you do with the community and this podcast and everything else. I look forward to next time.
Oh, my pleasure. And we have to plug GitHub Universe. The dates on that?
That's the November 9th and 10th, if I remember correctly. Available online, like everything else. A few lucky of us are going to be in San Francisco, but if you're not, please join us online.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Every session, live in real time. Free registration for anybody anywhere. Is that right?
That is my understanding. I'm not part of the team that defines that, but that's my understanding.
Nice, nice. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show. Pleasure to have you as a guest, as always.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
And until next time, keep shipping.
You've been listening to the Azure DevOps Podcast, a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Go to www.azuredevops.show for show notes and other episodes. On behalf of your host, Jeffrey Palermo, and our sponsors, thanks for listening, and may God bless you.